You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 149. Today's episode is a discussion about a famous New Orleans drink involving fire, alcohol, history, tradition, and coffee. The last show was all about Réveillon, the wonderful tradition of holiday meals celebrated between Thanksgiving and New Year's in New Orleans. If you missed it, go back and give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we jump in, let me talk about the people that make this show possible. Support comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection, the city's premier history museum located at 520 Royal Street in the heart of the French Quarter. There, you get to explore three centuries of great New Orleans stories in some of our most historic spaces, and admission is free. Don't miss the immersive film about the history of the French Quarter at night or any of the museum's changing exhibitions in the brand new Tricentennial Wing. Go to hnoc.org/visit to plan your trip. The most frequent questions I get are about moving to New Orleans. If you're ready to make the move, you need a good realtor, and that's where Liz Wood comes in. Let Liz and her team over at Liz Wood Realty help you find the right place. They can help whether you plan to rent or purchase. She makes the process fun and easy, so reach out to Liz at lizwoodrealty.com and make your dream of living in New Orleans a reality. And while you're working with Liz, you're going to need to secure financing. Reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast and let him help you get everything in place. That's what we did on our recent refi, and it was as smooth as could be. We also looked at purchasing another house and went through the whole pre-approval process with Tommy, and once again, it was as easy as could be. I'll put links in the show notes, but you can reach out to Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Bank. Finally, today's episode is sponsored by our Patreon supporters. If you love the podcast, the Facebook group, and the work I'm doing, please consider becoming a monthly supporter. Find out more at patreon.com/beyondbourbonst. We have perks at all levels, but if you join at the $10 level or above, we'll mention you on an episode, like Jamie Johnson, Melissa Roberson Lang, and Mark Rustini. And now, let's jump into today's topic, Café Brûlot. My guest today is a writer, an editor, and a public relations ace. She also happens to be the author of a wonderful new book about today's topic, Café Brûlot. Welcome to the show, Sue Strachan. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Yay.
We are recording outside on a warmer than normal December day, but it's a beautiful morning.
It's a wonderful morning. Thank you. I'm glad we're doing this on the porch, too.
Yeah, it's nice out here. We might get a little background noise, but that's all right. So I was really excited when you and I ran into each other and you told me you were working on this. Let's talk first a little bit about your background. So what brought you to the book?
Well, when I was working at the Times-Picayune, an editor at LC Press contacted me and said, I like your writing. And I've done some food writing, cocktail stuff. And she said, would you be interested in writing a book about New Orleans cocktail? And they have this series. LC Press has, and LC Press is Louisiana State University Press, has this series called Iconic New Orleans Cookbooks. I mean, cookbooks, cocktails, sorry. And that's probably their next series. And so the first one was the Sazerac, and that's by Tim McNally. And then they gave me a list of all these other cocktails. And Café Brûlot always popped out to me because it's always something I get when I go to one of the old line French Quarter restaurants and Commander's Palace, which is uptown, and also from friends from out of town. I mean, it's such a show. It's like flames, it's coffee, it's alcohol. You can't lose.
So, and I want to get pretty far into the details, but first let's start off with just a general overview. What is Café Brûlot?
Café Brûlot is a combination of brandy, cinnamon, cloves, lemon, like lemon peel, a little bit of lemon, a lemon slice or small lemon slice, orange peel, did I say cloves and cinnamon yet? I don't remember.
Cloves,
and cinnamon, sugar, and the sugar is an amount of how much your waiter puts in or not. And then some have orange curacao, some don't have an orange curacao or liqueur, and then it's finished with coffee. And it has to be a French dark roast coffee or coffee and chicory.
And I really love how in the book you kind of set it up. You talk about sort of the overview, but then one of the things you get to very early in the book, and again, it's called the Café Brûlot. You talk about the the scene, if you will. So describe for our listeners sort of what the scene is, because it's not like a drink that you just order and it shows up at the table.
No. So if you go to one of the old line restaurants, as I said earlier, like, and I'll just list them really quickly. They're mostly in the French Quarter. You have Antoine's, Arnaud's, Broussard's, Galatoire's, Brennan's gave me recipes, but they don't make it anymore. And then Commander's Palace, as I said earlier, is located uptown. So what they do is they bring out a guardon, which is like a rolling tableside presentation service. And they have a bowl. And depending what restaurant you're in, but I'll describe Antoine's. So Antoine's, they come out and they have this specially made bowl that has like these little jester devils, like are like the legs, and it's copper. And that was originally designed back in the 1880s by Jules Alciator, the son of the founder, who also designed the cups. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So they roll it out, and the mixture, the brandy mixture and the cloves and cinnamon are already in the bowl. And then what they start doing is they start adding some, you know, some little bit of the orange liqueur if you want it or not. And then they light it on fire. And then they ladle it up and down, and you see it on fire. And during this, you're smelling the cloves and the cinnamon. It smells like Christmas.
It does.
You can get Christmas year round. I mean, it's like smelling Christmas year round. You can be in July and it smells like Christmas. It's awesome. And then they do that. And then what Antoine's does is they pour it on the tablecloth. And so you see this like line on the, like they'll do it in a circle around the, you know, like it's around something. And everyone goes, oh, and then it dies down. And something Liz Williams at SOFAB, Southern Food and Beverage Museum, told me, it's not, the tablecloth is not on fire. It's the alcohol vapors that sit on top of the tablecloth. So it shouldn't burn. Mm-hmm. It hasn't burned in my experience. and then they pour the coffee on, and which adds another total like scent of like coffee and like an even more richer scent of cloves and coffee. And then they, you know, they bring out these cups that are demi-tasse cups. And but Antoine's is the one, again, who designed a very specific cup and saucer, which has a devil on the side, a very stylized devil on the side. And it's really quite lovely. It's quite, it's also very, as I said, an historic drink. So.
Yeah. In fact, the cover of your book has a picture of the Antoine's cup on it, right?
Yeah.
So it is quite... One, it ties into my last episode about Revillon, because a lot of those restaurants at the end of their Revillon service include it as the dessert or as an accompaniment to the dessert.
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes it replaces the dessert. I'm not a sweets person, so I usually like skip straight to the Café Brûlot, but, you know, I think a lot of people like to pair the Café Brûlot with the baked Alaska at Antoine's, which is another flaming, you know, flaming item, you know?
If you want a whole flaming dinner, I guess.
Exactly.
So it is quite the scene that you describe, and particularly at the old line restaurants, they, I'm thinking of Antoine's in particular, but really all of them make quite a show of it. And it is the kind of thing where your table mates and your neighbors are all going to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
But it does, there's something about the heat, I guess, that really brings out the smells and kind of individually. Exactly. So you do get them almost one at a time to me.
Yeah. It's sort of, it is like levels of smells that you get. And then I'm going to jump also to another presentation of the how they do Café Brûlot at Arnaud's. They take the orange and they do a strip of the orange, of the orange peel, still connected to the orange, and then they put the they stud the cloves in it. And so when they've, after they've lit the mixture on fire, they put like what I call a barbecue fork. Like it has to be kind of like a big heavy fork that like
with some distance between
You and the flame. And what they'll do is they'll take the ladle again, and instead of just going up and down, they'll pour it over the orange a couple of times. And what happens is it goes down the orange spiral and it sparks the cloves and the orange juices. And some people say you don't need the orange liqueur in it because you get the orange juices from that orange that come down into the Brûlot mixture, though I've never actually seen orange go down into it. But it's,
neither
it's,
have I.
You know, it's a nice thought. I mean,
read that. I think I read it in your book. And later I'll ask you about some of the different recipes. But I've never seen that actually happen. I have seen at Arnaud's how they light it, and it's very cool. It's basically the rind, right? So it's not like there's juice dripping down the thing. But it's a nice story anyway.
It's still a great presentation.
So you talk about in the book, you call it incendiary coffee.
Yeah.
And that really is a really descriptive term for what you see, right?
Yes. And that's what Brûlot means, is incendiary coffee, though in other, it has some other meanings too, like in some countries it's a what they call a no-see-um, one of those like little small bugs, but essentially for this purpose it means incendiary coffee. And when Jules Alcyatar brought it, either he, I will say he invented the U.S. version of Cafe Brillo. He, you know, he's a marketing genius. If you read up about Jules, he created a whole bunch of dishes and started the Cafe Brillo. And a good way, he came up with Cafe Brillo Diabolique, devilishly incendiary coffee. And it was a way of like, and you know, I think marketing it to the masses, and then the design of the cups kind of tied into it, and then also the stand as well. And I was talking to someone else. Like, we do credit Jules with that, but there was a larger family, you know, involved in this whole business, and Jules gets the credit for it. But who knows? I mean, you know how families are. There's a very, you know, family restaurants is a collaborative effort, but sometimes, you know, one person only gets the credit.
Well, and
as he should, yeah.
And we refer to Antoine's as the oldest continuously running family-owned restaurant, right? Family-established restaurant.
Yes.
And it very much was a family affair. You talk about that a little bit in the back of the book, where you get into those restaurants.
Yeah.
But like so many things, the details are murky, right? And you have a great chapter there, if you could elaborate a little bit about, no one really knows for sure sort of the true origins of Cafe Brillo, but it has a really interesting couple of backstories to it. So if you could share some of that with us.
Well, this was you know, I wrote this and researched this during the pandemic year in 2020, and I wasn't working full-time at that moment. So I was able to like sort of, you know, do a lot of research online and you know, the initial research said that it was Jean Lafitte who invented it. And, you know, it's and you'll see it on tourism sites. So, you know, who knows? After this, they may take it down. I don't know. And so, but they used to credit Jean Lafitte to doing this as a, and he was a pirate. For those who don't know, he was a pirate who was along Barataya Bay in South Louisiana. And his compatriot is Dominique Yao. And I bring him up for a reason is because they, you know, sometimes is ascribed to him, but mainly it's to Jean Lafitte. And also he's known for being the hero of the Battle of New Orleans, helping Andrew Jackson save the city from the British during the War of 1812. So, and there's a town, Jean Lafitte, you know, he's a very big history in South Louisiana. But I thought to myself, you know, it's a story, but like, was he like brewing coffee out in the swamps or on his ship? I don't know. You know, did he have brandy? Did he have cloves? Did he have cinnamon? Did he have lemons? You know, was he doing the mixture and the presentation that we were doing? Now, I'm not saying he didn't have brandy and he didn't have coffee, but I don't see him doing this in the middle of the swamps and on a ship. I could be wrong. He could have had it when he was in town, when he came back and, you know, to New Orleans. But, you know, somewhere along the line, that became the prescribed story that Jean Lafitte and sometimes Dominique Yao were the ones who invented it. The other story, which also is another one that kind of made me question, and I saw this in another book, was that it was invented during Prohibition. And I thought to myself, how can that happen? If, you know, granted, if they're making it tableside, you need alcohol to light it on fire. And, you know, even if you're doing it back in the kitchen, you still need to light it on fire.
Right.
So that didn't make sense either. So I, you know, talked to a bunch of food editors and food writers in the community about it. Real generous people, Wayne Curtis, Poppy Tooker. And they put me on to John Demures, who, if you know, if you lived in New Orleans in the 90s, was a food editor of New Orleans Magazine and a prolific cookbook writer. And he said, you need to get in touch with someone in Armagnac, France, because I think there's an origin from there. And Armagnac is a brandy. Mm-hmm. It's actually the oldest brandy. It's older than Cognac. And so, you know, I talked to a friend who's a distributor, and she put me on to the people who run the Armagnac, you know, the division or the, you know, promote Armagnac. Mm-hmm. And they got back to me right away and said, yes, Brillo is quite a tradition in Armagnac. And so it's made after the first distillation period. And what they do is it's just a brandy mixture, and they'll put cloves and cinnamon. And she said each vintner has their own recipe, and they'll invite people over to taste it or to spin the mixture together. And then sometimes they serve it with coffee, sometimes they don't. So that to me was like, okay, if you think of all the restaurants in New Orleans, you know, most of the old line ones have a base in France. You know, Antoine Alcyatar, though born in Italy, grew up in Marseille, Jean Galatois was born in that region, in the Gascony Armagnac region of France. And then Count Arnaud Cazeneuve, I don't know if I'm saying his last name correctly, but he was born in the same region. Mm-hmm. So at some point, you know, there's this kind of like mind meld of people like who are kind of like who had probably at some point tasted it. And then Jules, Antoine's son, was sent over there to train with the best chefs. And when he was training there, like the late 1870s, 1880s, you know, flaming drinks or flaming coffee drinks were all the rage. So at some point he could have, mm-hmm. you know, he could have seen it. So there's like, there's no, as I found with a lot of like doing some research, is like there are some dishes and there are some drinks that there is a clear line.
Right.
But most of them don't.
Right.
And
right.
this is one of them.
And it certainly makes sense. Armagnac, which is having a moment at, right now anyway, but there certainly is this, all these people that opened these restaurants were in that region mm-hmm. at that time. Mm-hmm. It certainly seems like, you know, no idea is original, that had an influence. Yeah. You also talked about Peychaud.
Yes.
In your book. So yes. Maybe mention him a little bit because he's famous for a couple of reasons here in New Orleans.
But. Well, he invented Peychaud's bitters, which, you know, if you've had like a cocktail that has bitters, I think the origins came from him. But the other thing is that many people think, you know, New Orleans is the origin of cocktails. And, you know, I thought so for years, again, doing research. And it was, you know, people have done it. And David, and again, I don't know if I'm saying his last name correctly, David Wundrich, who is a bar and spirits expert, had done some research and saying, no, cocktails were not invented. That cocktails, you truly know it. It was invented by these, you know, his research led it to thinking that it was something that the, like at pubs and the horse traders were selling horses. And then they would put some ginger kind of spicy mixture on their, in the rear end area. So it would cock their tail. And so then afterwards they would, you know, go in and like celebrate and like, oh, the cocktail, ha ha, you know. And then the other one is too, is that the cocktail was like the ends of like, you know, a bunch of these liqueurs and whatnot. So, but I still like the story that Anton Peychaud was the inventor of it, and it started in New Orleans.
And he was the first licensed pharmacist, I believe, the first yes. pharmacy in the United
yeah.
States.
Yeah.
And today you can visit the pharmacy museum.
That is, I totally recommend the pharmacy museum. It's such a, like, you can spend hours in there and discover something new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right around the corner from the historic New Orleans collection.
Too.
And it's haunted. And it's just, it is like stepping back in time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like stepping through the doorway and you're back 150, 180 years.
It really is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I loved the fact that the origins are murky and that you get into them. And sure, Alciatore is credited more or less with it and certainly popularized it.
Yes.
There's no doubt about
yeah.
that. But and in its form that we see it mostly in New Orleans.
Yes.
People think of Antoine's and think of Alciatore. But mm-hmm. I love, because it's like so much of history that you think one thing and it really is more of a evolvement, right? It's not so clear cut. And all of the stories are good. The only one to me that seems a little far-fetched, as you said, is Jean Lafitte.
Yeah.
I just can't quite imagine. I can certainly imagine him having brandy. I can certainly
yeah.
imagine having coffee. I can't imagine anything about sort of the legend and the fact of Jean Lafitte. I just can't imagine this flaming cocktail, right? But who knows?
Who right? knows? There may be someone who was like, you know, from a restaurant
that's right.
in New Orleans who, you know, obviously early 19th century, not at the Alciatore time, and who made it, you know, from France. I don't know. You
right.
know, you don't know.
Who knows? And the, you know, the Lafitte's blacksmith shop, which was rumored to be where his brother Pierre had a shop, isn't that far from some of these other buildings, so there would have been other people in the general area. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But really interesting. Another thing that jumped out at me in your book is you said that Café Brulot even inspired a soft drink.
Yes, and I'm always, it's a Hotel Grunewald caterers came up with this thing called Café Nola, in parentheses, Brulot. And it supposedly tasted like Café Brulot. Which, if you've had Café Brulot, it's a hot, obviously it's a flavored
right.
drink, it's a hot drink. And I'm like, I don't, you know, and if, you know, eventually, like, you'll get distracted, you're talking to people, and then you sip it, and it's cold, and I'll be honest, it's not great cold.
No.
It really isn't. So I was sort of curious of why someone wanted to do a Café Brulot cold drink. And it doesn't exist anymore, obviously, but they put it out, and supposedly, again, records don't say, it may or may not have had brandy in it or some liqueur in it. But yeah, that was sort of interesting. I will credit Liz Williams from Southern mm-hmm. Food and Beverage Museum for telling me about that.
Liz was a guest many, many moons ago. I'll have to find the link and put it in the show notes. But she was a guest when we talked about the Southern Food and Beverage Museum.
Yeah, she's fabulous.
And also home of the, going to draw a blank on what it's called exactly, but the it's home of the American Cocktail Museum inside SoFest.
Yes. But it's you know, again, it's like the Pharmacy Museum. There's always like, a bunch of different displays, and it goes from state for state on like what makes, you know, American cuisine in each of the states unique.
Right.
Which I think is great.
Yeah. Right. It's not focused on New Orleans per se.
No.
It's focused on the South in general. The thing that hit me about the soft drink, one, was I thought that would be disgusting. But two, it probably spoke to the popularity of the drink, that it was so popular that they would then do this, right?
I agree. And then the other fun thing about doing research is that there was a Tulane newspaper, a student newspaper that was called the Brulo, but it was spelled a little bit differently, that the administration decided not to, you know, they decided to shut down because it was too offensive to... the ladies. And then I think they started up again, then it was shut down again, which I thought was amusing. And then the other thing I think was interesting, and I wish I had delved more into it in the book, you know, if you have any regrets about your books, everyone has a regret after they've published your book, would be that, and I talked about briefly with my friend Carla Adams, who's from New Orleans, and it's a big New Orleans tradition amongst some families to make Café Brûlot during the Thanksgiving or Christmas meals. And it can be the father. Usually I see fathers doing it. Some women are doing it. They all have their Café Brûlot sets. They get the Brûlot sets from Adler's, which is a local New Orleans store. Or, you know, I met someone at a book signing who was, you know, searching eBay, trying to find the right cups, the right, you know, bowl and everything. And I put her on to, I'll say, cocktailkingdom.com has like a great, you know, bunch of, they have the right ladle, they have the cups, they have the stand. So if you're looking to do this, that's where you can go. But it's either the family thing is just really, you know, fascinating, because I'm not from here originally. I'm originally from Connecticut. I came down for Newcomb College at Tulane University, and I usually have to go home for Christmas. And so I never was really part of that whole tradition because I was never here. And so, you know, as the book came out, I've had people send me photos, which is great, of them making Café Brûlot. I've seen two so far that have the orange thing, which to me always seems very, very like risky. But, you know, if you've been doing it for a while, go for it.
Right. Well, and it does tie into Réveillon, because Réveillon today is done in the restaurants as a way to boost tourism and really get locals into restaurants during what would be a slow time of year. But that Réveillon tradition was based on the tradition of having these huge meals after midnight mass.
Yes.
And so it would have been perfectly in line with those big, elaborate meals to have Café Brûlot.
Yes.
And so uptown families, that's where that's coming from, without a doubt, that it's part of those traditions as well.
No, and it's wonderful. And I am spending time Christmas in New Orleans this year, so I'm expecting invitations.
So you'll get an invite, hopefully, right?
I want to get an invite.
If anyone's listening, and I know some old line New Orleans families who are fans of the show, if you're listening and your family's one of those, Sue is available. She might even bring copies of the book. You mentioned
cinnamon rolls.
That's right.
Cinnamon sticks.
I have a roll of cinnamon sticks here that Sue brought to me, and I'm not going to let the. I might let the children make cinnamon toast with it, but I'm going to put that in my coffee. Moving on, I did want to talk about another sort of New Orleans institution is the Sugar Bowl. And you have a whole chapter where you talk about kind of the relationship between Café Brûlot and the Sugar Bowl. And I thought I knew a decent amount about Café Brûlot, but I did not know that tradition. So can you talk a little bit about how the Sugar Bowl marries in with Café Brûlot and the sort of the history?
So yeah, this was one of the fun discoveries too, is doing research, is that sometime in the mid-20th century, and then it died out in it looks like the 70s, and that they used to, like the night before the Sugar Bowl, they used to have the dinner at Antoine's. And part of the ceremonies or the agenda was they would take the two competing coaches and they'd put them on each side of the Brûlot bowl, and they would pretend to like spoon the whatever. You know, I can't tell in the photos if they're flames or not, but they, you know, they have flames. Some of them are, one time I think one photo has them in chef's hat. But you'll see some interesting, if you're an SEC fan, you get to see Bear Bryant making Brûlot at Antoine's. And, you know, I think probably, I'm trying to think of which, Roy Alcitor was probably the one who instigated that at the time. And I honestly do not know if he was on the committee, but I suspect he probably was.
Yes. Yeah.
The interesting thing is Antoine's has all those photos of all those Sugar Bowl things, which is great.
Yeah, and the picture in your book is of Bear Bryant,
yes.
I think, and a young Bear Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
So for people that remember the SEC back in those days with Bear Bryant, it's a pretty neat photograph yeah. to see that.
He's not wearing his trademark houndstooth.
No, he's not. probably a fire risk, I would think.
Probably.
So you mentioned earlier, but I want to talk a little bit about what goes into Café Brulo and some of the... In your book, you have this really great section with recipes and some of the variations on it a little mm-hmm. bit. So... If you can just kind of again restate sort of what the traditional recipe is, but then maybe a couple of the variations.
Well, this was also really fun too because I was able to go to Antoine's and Arnaud's and Galtois and sample them. Again, this was also during the pandemic, so I wasn't able to go every place. But what I did discover, but I'll start again with the ingredients. It's a brandy, and some places use cognac. Though one waiter said, "No, you don't need cognac. It's just use brandy." No one, interestingly enough, uses Armagnac,
right.
which was interesting. Yeah. Cloves, cinnamon sticks, lemon. Some don't use orange.
Really?
Yeah, some don't use orange. They all use sugar. And then the variant, the two main variants are the coffee, French dark mm-hmm. roast or coffee and chicory. And they use coffee and chicory at Arnaud's. And I did a taste test, and I actually do like the coffee and chicory. It has a nice kick to it.
I do too.
And I have to do a quick shout out to Sierra Coffee Shop and Kevin because he let me do a taste test of different types of, I'm not a coffee
Coast
drink.
Coast Roast, right?
Coast Roast, yes.
Yeah,
yep,
with
yep.
Kevin Pito.
Yep. And he let me do a taste test of each of the regular coffee, French dark roast, coffee and chicory, and just so I could just taste the base flavor. And I'm not a coffee drinker, so that was very instructive when I went in and did the taste testing between the different places. And coffee, I like it with coffee and chicory. The other big one is the orange liqueur. Some use orange curacao. Some use, I think one recipe has triple sec in it. I mm-hmm. haven't, and I will go on record saying triple sec is garbage. And I will thank Galtois for letting me taste test all the orange liqueurs, and it was triple sec, mm-hmm. curacao, and grand marnier. And now doing that, I will not have a margarita with triple sec in anymore. It's just and now I taste it. If it has triple sec, I'm like, okay, I need a new margarita. This is not good. And so that was one of the things that was really interesting, the major differences between the orange liqueur. But most of them use those orange liqueur. And, if you can get Grand Marnier, use Grand Marnier. Mm-hmm. It makes a huge difference, to me at least. And you do taste the difference. Now, the other crazy variant is I saw this in a Cocktail Kingdom video with Dale DeGroff, was he used Kirschwasser, which is a cherry brandy liqueur. Mm-hmm. And, Charles Carter at Antoine's, who's a waiter, he's a third generation waiter there, was very gamely making all these different brulos for me to taste. And also shout out to Lisa and Rick Blunt for, allowing me free reign in the restaurant at the time. And I like Kirschwasser in it better. And so it was sort of fun to see the different variants of going on there. So, the two major things are the orange curacao, and then Arnaud's doesn't use the orange. Mm-hmm. They want to use the orange flavor going down. So it's all very interesting. Each one has like their slight quirks to it, which makes it fun to taste test.
Yeah, and again, this is going to come out. So as you're listening to this, listener, if you're listening to it in real time, it's in mid-December. It's perfect to go try again. All of those restaurants that we've discussed have Revillon menus, and mm-hmm. they all serve Café Brulo year-round, but they do include it. I think every one of them on their Revillon menus, it's highlighted, which it should be. It's a sort of a signature thing for them anyway. But it's a great time, particularly if you're going to go to a couple of them, try them, because you can definitely taste the difference between Arnaud's and Antoine's, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
It's very...
You can.
Another place that does it at Revillon is the Gumbo Shop.
I did not know that.
They do, and they make a good one.
Ooh, I'm going to have to taste that.
I think they use coffee and chicory. They do the whole presentation.
Yeah.
But they have it pre-made, so they have it, like, you see it, like, almost like a punch bowl when you walk in, but they do light it, as they're pouring each one, but it's sort of from a community pot. It's very, very good, and I think they only do it with their Revillon menu.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm going to have to taste that while I'm in town.
And side note, their Revillon menu is traditionally the lowest priced of the Revillon menus, so it's about $35, so it's a great deal, and it's a fun way to try it. And I think they don't do it year-round, so it's a chance to...
That's a great chance, and Gumbo Shop is another really great place to go.
Fun, casual.
In the French Quarter, yeah, exactly.
It's a good, you know, it's a mix of locals and tourists. It's a good way to sample. It is a place where, now I'm on a tangent, you can sample a lot of New Orleans dishes,
mm-hmm.
almost tapas style.
Yes.
So it's a really, like, it's hard to find jambalaya on a menu, but they have jambalaya on the menu.
And it's good, and it's hard to find good jambalaya.
Yes. It's just not, you know, most people make it at home.
Yes.
So anyway, so there's your plug for your free plug for the gumbo shop. You know, the thing that struck me in reading your book is the, and you've kind of highlighted it here, is the details. Like every, and of course now someone's going to use a saw, but we'll just have to live with it, is the details. Every little piece is very thought out and is deliberate, from
yes.
the demitasse cups
yes.
to the bowl itself, the serving utensils, each ingredient, as you've described, it's a very deliberate. This is not a quick drink to make.
No, it's not. You have to have the right bowl, you know, and Adler's looks, their bowl looks to me more like a Revere bowl. Well, I mean, uh-huh. I grew up in New England, so I call them Revere bowls. And then the ladle has to be specific because it has to have a strainer at one of the end to keep the cloves and cinnamon and any, you know, whatever else is in there from going into your coffee, your demitasse cup.
Uh-huh.
And the demitasse cup, you have to have a handle to hold it because it's a hot drink.
Right.
So there's all, you know, and then the Guerdon service, it's all ties in together. And you really, it's not something that I don't think you can really make. I'm going to say a word, and it's part of it's a curse word, like half, you know.
Yes, you, know you can curse here. So half-assed.
Half-assed.
Yeah. And that's why it strikes me, these stories of someone doing it at home, like the preparation and the tools required to do this. This is not something you can just whip up. This is a whole process. But I love that. So much of New Orleans is about rituals, and this drink is so much. Everything is in the ritual. Right?
Yes, yes. And the people that talked to me after the book came out were, you know, I did stuff, and they would talk to me like, "Oh my God, I make it for Christmas, and this is what I do," and they're really excited to talk about it because it's a good way, I think it actually is in a good way. It's
yeah.
a source of pride,
mm-hmm.
and it's a continuation of like sharing a tradition with, you know, someone who isn't from here. And just sharing it with other people. I mean, a lot of New Orleans gatherings during the holidays which is wonderful because I usually stay at Thanksgiving. You know, sharing. You know, it's not just family; it is family. But they're like, "Oh, you don't have a place to go?
Right?
Come. You know, come." And then it's like a one big family. You know, it's like, you know, started, you know, a dinner for 12 turns into a Thanksgiving dinner for 12 turns into a Thanksgiving dinner for 20.
Yes.
And so it introduces a lot of people, makes them feel welcome, part of the tradition. Of the city,
yeah.
Part of the traditions of the city.
Yeah, definitely it does. The last thing I want to talk about, and you've mentioned them in passing, but you have a whole section devoted to kind of these classic New Orleans restaurants and sort of their background a little bit and how they play into this drink and the variations thereof. So if you could just maybe again kind of go through the sort of classic New Orleans restaurants that you mentioned for our listeners so that they have options.
All right, so in the French Quarter, you have Antoine's, which is the oldest, it's like such a long sentence,
yes,
the oldest continuously owned family restaurant, I think just in the U.S. or in New Orleans?
In America.
In America.
Yeah.
And then you have Arnaud's, which was founded by Count Arnaud Cazeneuve. He was not an original count. He just decided to name himself Count, and his wife was called Lady. It's now owned by the Kasbarian family. They do a fabulous job. And they were, you know, and then you have Galatoire's, which is a favorite. You know, people love to go there. Fridays at Galatoire's is famous. It has these big dinners, Friday luncheons, and, you know, Halloween, people go there and they dress up in costume. You know, they started this thing where they auction off the tables the Friday before Christmas Eve, sorry, and then the Friday before Mardi Gras as a way to raise money for certain charities, and the charities change every year, which is, you know, absolutely fabulous. You have Broussard's, which just celebrated its 100th anniversary, and you know, that's a, you know, that has a really awesome history to that as well. And then you have, I hope I'm not missing anyone. So then outside, we've got Broussard's, Galatoire's, Arnaud's, Antoine's, and then Commander's Palace, which is located uptown. That is the Brennan family, but not of the Brennan's restaurant in New Orleans, which I did get recipes from, but they do not make it, which is kind of weird because they make Bananas Foster, which is a flaming dessert.
Yeah, I was very surprised that Brennan's doesn't make Café Brûlot.
I was surprised too, and maybe we'll start now.
Right.
But, you know, one dish that you can like, actually you're like, oh, it was founded in New Orleans, but it has two stories to it, is Bananas Foster. You have one story in which, you know, Pip Brennan goes in there and you know, talks to Chef, and we have this muckety muck in town, and, you know, we need to be something special, and, you know, my brother bought too many bananas, figure something out. And then the other story, which I found in Ella Brennan's book, is, you know, it was based on a dish that her their family made, used to make, and her mom used to make too. And the muckety muck, and then it goes into the muckety muck came in town, and then Ella went into there and worked with the chef. So we know it was started in Brennan's. It's just who started it?
Right.
Whose story do you want to, you know, believe or, you know, work with?
Yeah, it's amazing to me that they don't make Cafe Brulo. You would think at some point that they did. And that they should.
You know, Brennan's? I think yes. Brennan's, they did. They gave me recipes. And they also made, I don't know when they stopped. So Brennan's gave me two recipes. One was of Cafe Brulo, the traditional one. And the other one is called Orange Brulo, which is a single serving of Brulo in an orange cup. Mm-hmm. Like they peel out an orange, which is kind of fascinating. And that recipe was actually, I was also in a book called by Lefcadio Hearn called Creole Cookbook. Mm-hmm. That was published in 1875 or something, 1880s. You can get it at the Herman Grima bookstore. And they had the recipe for that, and they also had the recipe for Brulo. But the interesting thing about that is they didn't use the orange liqueur, they used the Kirschwasser.
Hmm. Really?
Yeah.
I'm intrigued by that recipe, so I would like to try it with the Kirschwasser.
Yeah.
I just think that's an interesting take on it. I could see it pairing well, particularly with coffee and chicory. You also mentioned earlier Kevin Pito. He was a guest on the show.
Yes.
And he is, in fact, Kevin, when you listen to this, I know he periodically will do coffee tastings. It would be interesting to do a coffee, sort of a coffee flight to introduce people to the different styles like that.
Right? I think that'd be a fun idea. I mean, I was, you know, as someone who doesn't drink coffee, I learned a lot. I liked it. He's also been really generous. He donated coffee for some of my events, or French Dark Roast for events around town. And, you know, when I was going to pick it up, he's like, wait a minute, you got to taste this one. And, like, it turned into another taste testing. And it was funny. I'm like, no, we're fine. We're fine with this one.
I'm biased because he's also my racquetball partner. But he's so passionate about coffee. Mm-hmm. And what you find is it is like wine or whiskey or anything, that there really are, when you sit with somebody that knows coffee and you taste the different styles, you can taste it just like you can a wine or a whiskey or anything like mm-hmm. that. You can pick up different things in the palate and the mm-hmm. profiles of it. So before we wrap up, let's talk a little bit about what you have going on. So you have an event coming up, I think?
Yes, on December 15th, I am at Beauregard Kai's house, and I'm giving a short talk about the drink. And then Charles Carter from Antoine's is going to come and do a live demonstration of it, because it's nice. Definitely a drink you need to see live. And then they're going to have samples, and they're going to be selling the book. And Beauregard Kai's house is located in the French Quarter. And it's a lovely historic home, and it has a really interesting history to it. And I recommend, even, you know, I'd love to see you on the 15th, but you'd go there anyway. And it's haunted too, various ghosts. So, you know, it's the French Quarter. Every building's haunted.
Nice. And where can people get your book?
Well, you can go to, locally in New Orleans, you can go Garden District Bookshop, Octavia Books, Estella's in Metairie, and Scriptura. And Hazelnut, and that's it for now. But if you are out of town, Amazon is selling that, and also LSU Press through their site.
And we'll put links to all that in the show notes, so people have plenty of ways to get your book mm-hmm. if they don't make it to the event on the 15th. And thank you so much for taking the time to discuss the book with me today.
Thank you.
The book is wonderful. It's called The Cafe Brulo. Please check it out. I think it's a fun little read. There's a lot of history in it. We've covered a lot of it, but there's a lot more there. The recipes are fun to explore, and maybe you're interested in making your own version of Cafe Brulo. So if you do, we would love to find out about that. So reach out to me. Again, I'll put Sue's contact information. We'd love to see pictures. If you're listening and that's your family tradition, please let us know. We'd love to hear about it. Again, thanks again for being with me today. Thanks to our sponsors, the Historic New Orleans Collection, Liz Wood Realty, Tommy Manzella at Gulf Coast Mortgage, and our Patreon supporters. As I mentioned, links will be in the show notes over at beyondbourbonst.com/149. And with that, I'll hand it off to the girls.
New episodes are available every other Wednesday. If you're enjoying the podcast, please share it with someone else who loves New Orleans as much as you do.
Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.